This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with one of my personal solutions to better cardiovascular health, Berkeley Life Nitric Oxide Support Supplements. Just two capsules of Berkeley Life daily provide the dietary nitrate equivalent of 7 ounces of beets and can support cardiovascular health, maintain healthy blood pressure levels, and improve overall circulation. For more information and to purchase, just go to drhoffman.com/berkeleylife. drhoffman.com/berkeleylife. Berkeley Life Nitric Oxide Support Supplements. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. We're talking about diet and its relationship to chronic disease, but there also is a nexus to connect poor metabolic health to susceptibility to coronavirus. And I think that this is an excellent time to alert Americans to the connection between what I call poor protoplasm. I've written about that in a recent blog, and susceptibility to all manner of disease, including viral infections. It's been estimated by Mark Hyman, who's been a real outspoken proponent of changing our dietary guidelines, that a mere 12% of Americans are truly metabolically fit, even if you don't have full-blown diabetes, hypertension, cardiovascular disease. It may be that you suffer from insulin resistance, metabolic imbalance that favors high blood sugars. You haven't crossed the threshold to true diabetes. But unfortunately, the vast majority of Americans are on the road to metabolic imbalance. And it makes sense because there are a variety of mechanisms by which abnormal blood sugar predisposes to infection. It's been shown that if you have high blood sugar, it literally paralyzes your white blood cells. There's also the connection of angiotensin-converting enzyme, which is actually a pathway by which a lot of antihypertensive drugs work. It appears that ACE is a way that the virus hitches a ride into cells. And a lot of people who are hypertensive or even borderline may have pathways that favor viral attachment through that mechanism. There are a whole lot of ways that metabolic fitness play a role in susceptibility to viruses. With us today, Nina Teicholz. She's a journalist who's author of the best-selling book, The Big Fat Surprise, Why Butter, Meat, and Cheese Belong in a Healthy Diet. It really created quite a stir, but she subsequently appeared on the op-ed pages of New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and a lot of prestigious publications. She's making a big splash. Although she's not a physician, she is Stanford University trained, and also, I didn't realize this, you also attended Oxford University, is that correct?
That is, yes.
Okay. Well, and there are people in the nutrition establishment who push back against you, and they say, well, you know, who are you to say this? I mean, we've relied on these low-fat guidelines for so many decades. How can you possibly challenge this orthodoxy? Where's your PhD in nutrition, biochemistry, et cetera, et cetera? And so you've generated a lot of controversy, right?
Yes, I think that generating controversy, it shows that you've struck a sensitive spot, which is that if there was nothing to debate, then there would be no controversy. But there's clearly quite a lot here to debate, and I think it's a reasonable thing to say, oh, you have no degrees and you don't come from inside the field, and I completely understand those criticisms, and I can only say that my experience has been in studying this field. It took me a decade to write my book, and I've been studying it since now for another 5 years, is that it has taken only outsiders, journalists and people from outside the field of nutrition, academics and other fields to really take a more critical look at what the science actually says and shows, because people who are inside the field are very reluctant to do that. You know, what happens in academia is so interesting, and I never would have known this had I not become so involved in this particular area, but a field becomes captured.
And it's kind of like the nutrition swamp.
It is. It's right. Like you do have to drain the swamp, but it's it is true. And people will say, well, you know, that a hypothesis will only die when it's, you know, when its proponents have, you know, have finally all themselves have died. But this is a hypothesis that has been, we're going in the third generation now, and they're just people in the next generation who pick up the baton and carry it along. But the reason the hypothesis survives is that it is, number one, this hypothesis was adopted very early on by extremely powerful institutions, including the American Heart Association and the National Institutes of Health, our U.S. government. And when I say this hypothesis, I mean the idea that saturated fat and cholesterol cause heart disease. That was the original hypothesis that was put forth by scientists the first recommendation anywhere in the world that you should avoid cholesterol and saturated fat was from the American Heart Association in 1961. Mm-hmm. And so ever since then, the government has been pouring billions of dollars into trying to prove that this is true. They've funded trials on more than 100,000 people trying over and over and over again to show this diet works. And they just can't. Every trial comes up somehow lacking, and every trial is somehow explained away as being not quite this, not enough that, not enough, you know, we didn't do this right or that right, wasn't quite powered enough. But you have a field where if you raise your hand up timidly to say, you know, maybe we should try something else. You know, the experience of scientists whom I interviewed was pretty much exactly the same, which was they would lose their grants, get sort of drummed out of the field, no longer invited to present at conferences, cease to be part of the conversation, and cease to be part of the in group, unable to get their papers published. I mean, and that's what
think.
I mean.
And you know, and also
it's a group thing.
There's also some really, I think there's some significant economic incentives here too, because recently there's what's called the Eat Lancet report, which is a report basically saying that we need to reduce our consumption of animal protein, go more towards vegan alternatives. And what they do, and it's kind of a tricky argument, they say, well, you know, we're pretty sure that it's good to eat a low-fat diet, you know, eat lots and lots of plant foods. But by the way, we're saving the planet. So even if we're, you know, even the science is a little sketchy about the benefits of that, it's important that we eat low on the food chain, lots of plants, you know, animals require a lot of water and a lot of resources. They have a high carbon footprint in those farms. So let's do the patriotic thing and, you know, have meatless Mondays, right?
There has been a confluence of financial and ideological interests that have come around to support this diet, and you could spend a whole hour just talking about that. I don't know how much your listeners want to know about, you know, everything from the vegetable oil companies like Monsanto, Unilever, ADM, Cargill, I mean, some of the biggest companies in the world that are all behind the saturated fat caps, you know, that keep saturated fats low because if you're eating vegetable oils instead, that benefits them. And you know, then there's the whole pharmaceutical industry that depends on people staying sick. In fact, chronic disease is the best invention ever for big pharma because people stay sick for long, long periods of time. It's a very slow, long, painful death of years and years of insulin and other pills that you have to take. And I mean, it's an unholy alliance of interests that I can't, it's too sad to go through the whole list, but I just want to mention one other factor that is also equally strong, which is intellectual bias.
Yes.
So people who've devoted their entire careers, I'm just writing up a paper, a post right now about the person on the Dietary Guideline Committee who wants to push the caps on saturated fat down even lower. Hmm. She has spent her whole career trying to prove that saturated fats are bad for you. It's almost, it's like a study in cognitive dissonance. Right. Every single one of her studies on tens and tens of thousands of people has shown no effect, no effect, no effect, no effect. You know, this one failed down. And yet,
puts it more in the realm of ideology rather than true science. The spirit of scientific inquiry is to be open to conclusions that challenge your current assumptions.
Yes, but the field of nutrition science, as far as I can tell, starting with Ansel Keys, a pathologist at the University of Minnesota himself, was always to say, I must be right, no matter what the evidence is. The evidence was just something to be explained away, and he would never back down from his theory, no matter what the data said. There has just been this bizarre unresponsiveness to the data. And it's like, we must be right, and the data is just sort of something you do on the side. It's inexplicable by any other scientific standards in any other field. So this intellectual bias is very strong. And in some ways, it's understandable. If you've devoted your whole life to trying to prove something, it seems, I can imagine, it would be unimaginable to think that this has all been for naught. But, you know, again, we have to go back to the incredible urgency of the health of our population. We are indeed so sick. I mean, as Mark Hyman, the number you mentioned of 12% of us are metabolically healthy, that comes out of a study from the University of North Carolina showing that the people who are healthy are people who are not on a medication, not on a statin, not on any kind of medication. That's just, and this is the adult population, of course. So 88% of us.
A dwindling percentage.
Yeah. Well, this study was maybe from a year and a half ago now, but 88% of us are on some kind of medication to prevent disease or blood pressure lowering medication. So not yet diagnosed fully with a chronic diet related disease. That number of people who've actually been diagnosed is about 60%. Have at least one diagnosis, according to the CDC. So that's also a terrible number. I mean, these are terrible numbers. And you know, when you feel like you can understand scientists and their intellectual bias and the loss of their careers, you have to remind yourself that it's not really acceptable when people are suffering so much. I mean, we really have to get it right fast. And when I speak to people inside the field, you know, and they are sort of like, well, we have to be slow and take things slow and, you know, incremental change so we don't offend people in the field and people can't handle that degree of radical change. You know, I feel like, yes, go ahead.
I want to juxtapose this with the urgency that we have about, you know, COVID-19, which is
correct.
That within a matter, you know, this has grabbed our attention, you know, within a matter of weeks. We have proposed treatments, we have vaccine candidates galore, we have public health measures that are draconian, at the expense of the economy to turn this around. And yet, a couple of months ago, we were faced with a much more serious epidemic, an epidemic of cardiovascular disease, an epidemic of diabetes, hypertension, the degenerative diseases, even many cancers that are diet related. And there wasn't a lot of urgency about that. It was like, well, you know, let's take our time. Let's have the scientific debate. You know, maybe in a couple of decades, we'll have data that, you know, and I mean, I think that's a paradox, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, the number that I had when I added up all the CDC numbers on chronic disease was that there were 4,600 people dying every day from a chronic diet-related disease. You compare that to COVID, you know, we're lapping COVID on a daily basis.
We're not minimizing,
It's all those numbers are only growing. None of those curves are reversing themselves. And right. So it's just that it's been a slow moving train wreck. It hasn't been like planes falling out of the air and crashing the way COVID has hit us. And so we've just become accustomed to this idea that we have mass, you know, that we're spending 15% of our GDP on diabetes. We've just become accustomed to this level of sickness. Everybody's sick. Everybody knows somebody with cancer and dying. That's just the new normal. And it's also, I think it's partly been accepted because people can't figure out what the solutions are. And so they have nothing to offer to reverse it. But there's also the terrible fact that when a solution does come along, which is that this, you know, as I said, this study on diabetes showing it could be reversed, half of those diagnoses in America could be reversed within a year potentially. That study gets no press attention, reported nowhere, actively.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, it was a hostile reaction to that study. And now the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee, which is this small appointed group of experts that are supposed to review the science of the last 5 years and come out with the next iteration of the guidelines or the expert report that underlies the guidelines, they're saying, unbelievably, oh, we can't find any studies on the low-carb diet. We can't find any. There's, you know, 100 clinical trials.
That's like saying there's no studies about nutritional supplements, you know, and if they were so good, there would be studies about them. Yeah, I've been there around the nutrition supplement debate.
It's like just, I mean, it's hard to understand it as anything but active suppression of the science. And again, as you said, there's a lot of financial interest. There are what we could call intellectual or ideological biases. I mean, it's just a huge status quo that does not want to change. And that status quo is high carb, grain based, industrial vegetable oils. That status quo does
not. Impossible burger, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
Does not want to change.
Yeah. Okay, folks, let's pause for a moment and allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this important message with you. Here goes. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Protocol for Life Balance product line, available at my online dispensary. Protocol for Life Balance offers a wide range of professional-grade products using ingredients backed by strong scientific research. Among them, several stand out, which help support positive mood and relaxation. GABA, 5-HTP, SAMe, L-tryptophan, and Mucuna extract. With current economic and living conditions causing widespread sadness and tension, these neurotransmitters and their precursors can help support positive mood and relaxation. That's according to numerous clinical studies. Their ingredients are backed by solid scientific data. They're only available from healthcare practitioners, but they're available to you at drhoffman.com/protocol for life balance. That's drhoffman.com/protocol for life balance. Thanks for listening and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you, and that's especially important as we message during this coronavirus pandemic. And now back to our guest, Nina Teicholz. You are really spearheading an initiative to challenge those dietary guidelines and change the way that we make recommendations. And some people think that we just simply shouldn't be making recommendations because when the government makes recommendations, they get it wrong so often that it actually creates more harm than good. So what shape has your activism taken lately? There's actually an organization that you've been instrumental in promoting that's taken on the dietary guidelines, right?
Yes. Well, I founded this group called the Nutrition Coalition in 2015, and you can find it at nutritioncoalition1word.us. And our goal has been mainly to challenge the process of the guidelines, so the science by which they're done. And we don't need to get into the nitty gritty of it, but it's, you know, there's a lack of transparency. There's no disclosure of the conflicts of interest of the committee, this all-powerful committee that reviews the science. There's no management of bias in the committee. So you have like a group of people who are all anti-saturated fats making this decision that's going to affect all of America. They don't use any recognized scientific methodology for reviewing the science. They just make up their own. It's unverified. And it, you know, what they'll do is they'll make all kinds of recommendations based on very weak science called epidemiology. Anyway, we are mainly kind of going after the science to say we need a rigorous process. We're not advocating for any one diet or any one approach. So, we really believe that if the science were done correctly, then the good science would rise to the top. So we the only issue that we have taken a direct kind of stand on is the issue of saturated fats, because this is one where, you know, there's such a clear emerging consensus around the world that we got it wrong on saturated fats.
This is studies that show that high fat dairy does not contribute, in fact, to cardiovascular disease, although the recommendations still are posted, American Heart Association, you know, et cetera, that we should be drinking low-fat or skim milk and low-fat cheese, low-fat cottage cheese, low-fat yogurt, all that stuff. That's clearly, that science has been overturned.
It's so clearly has, you know, not only for dairy fats, but for really any kind of saturated fats. It's a super interesting story, and I don't want to, you know, flog my book, but I would say that, like, if you really want to understand the history of how it all happened, it's fascinating because there actually were large, rigorous, government-funded trials on saturated fats, all kinds of saturated fats all over the world on tens of thousands of people, and none of them could show that saturated fats had any effect on cardiovascular or total mortality. And this all happened in the 1960s and 70s. But they were all completely ignored. Yeah. So,
it's
such a crazy story.
Some influence, too, from the sugar industry, from the soft drink industry, which sought to minimize the harm of sugar and high fructose corn syrup. And, you know, even some of the government campaigns, you know, the Let's Move campaign, you know, the whole notion that, you know, if you just get out there and exercise, you burn off all those excess calories. Well, it turns out that you can't run away from a bad diet, no matter how much you exercise.
Yes, that is absolutely true. You cannot exercise your way out of a bad diet. And there have been many campaigns by the food industry to try to convince us it's all about calories in, calories out. It doesn't matter what kind of calories you eat. All calories are the same. That's largely a whole campaign by, as you said, by Coca-Cola trying to. So they want everybody to think that a can of Coke is the same as eating, a salad. That has the same effect. 100 calories of Coke is the same as 100 calories of salad. But, you know, it's just that has just been shown in so many ways, just demonstrably not to be true. But, you know, getting back to saturated fats, the idea that we should still be having a cap on these natural whole fats that exist in so many natural foods is crazy. I mean, there are dozens of papers that have now reviewed all the evidence in saturated fats by scientists all over the world. And all of them come to the same conclusion, or nearly the same conclusion, that we got it wrong in saturated fats. So what does the U.S. government do? I mean, this really does, I think, get back to your question of should we have guidelines at all? Because the USDA appoints a panel, an expert panel, and who do they appoint to look at the saturated fat issue? It are four people, all of whom are anti-saturated fats. But actually, it violates the federal statute to have you're supposed to appoint a balanced committee. So it's ripe for a lawsuit. You just can't appoint four biased people to all come to the, you know, to say, oh, we agree and we're ignoring all the evidence to the contrary.
And sometimes if you look at the CVs of these individuals buried within the fine print, our affiliations with the grain industry, the processed food industry, the makers of new innovative products like the Impossible Burger, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right?
Correct. Right. So here's a little cute little detail. One of the people on the saturated fat subcommittee that I was just speaking about is somebody who takes hundreds of thousands of dollars from the nut industry. Everybody, pistachio, pecans, almonds, walnuts, every kind of nut. Those are unsaturated fats. And his whole argument is you should eat these unsaturated fats and then you won't have to eat any kind of meat substitute.
And I've got nothing against eating nuts. They have plenty of valuable nutrients and fiber and, you know, beneficial compounds in them that are heart healthy.
Right.
And,
nothing wrong with nuts, yeah. Except for if you're using them to replace. If your argument is eat these and don't eat any saturated fats and don't eat meat and don't eat dairy because you should be eating nuts instead, which is what this individual, that's what his argument is. It's also what Eat Lancet argued, that report that was basically a near vegan diet was telling everybody. I think they said eat 500% more nuts daily than you normally would because, you know, you need to get rid of meat and dairy.
Well, okay because I followed up my grass-fed steak the other night with a large portion of pistachios and walnuts and almonds. So I'm covering my bases there pretty well.
I eat nuts too.
That's fine.
But I also eat meat, and I wouldn't tell anybody not to. Indeed. So, I mean, the point is that there are financial conflicts of interest on the committee, and they should be disclosed, and all of that should be transparent. And there was one of the things that my group did early on was we were sort of the main group urging Congress to get the National Academy of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine, which is the highest group in the land, to do what became the first ever outside peer review of the dietary guideline process. Nobody had ever looked at the process. And their report was, they did two reports and they're stunning. They say, look, in order for these guidelines to be, what was the word they used? Credible. They need to be revised. So, I mean, there's no shortage of credible authority saying we have problems with the guidelines. The problem is somehow forcing change. And one of the things that we started to do recently, is that on our website and also another group called Low Carb Action, which is at lowcarbaction.org, which is a group that's just arguing for the low carb diet, is there's just a number of, you know, campaigns. If you want to call your congressman, call your representative, your senator. I mean, there needs to be a real, it needs to be a movement amongst people who really care about these issues, because they know that the guidelines didn't help them, didn't help a relative. And I think this really has to be a sort of grassroots bottom up movement, because it's certainly not happening from the top down.
Well, in circling back to our original proposition, can I boost my immune system through my diet? Do you agree with the Canadian Dietetics Association that, simply put, you cannot boost your immune system through diet, and no specific food can help you resist the COVID-19 epidemic? Obviously, you demur, and, you know, I agree with you, is that we need to fortify ourselves with healthy foods and the right kind of diet. We need to avoid metabolic disorders that put us at higher risk for complications from COVID-19. And it's a great time to exhort the public to take action. A lot of us are locked down. We have the opportunity to experiment with new foods. If we can get a hold of them, we can get most foods that we want to access, except for toilet paper. That's in short supply, and hand sanitizer. that's neither here nor there. So, give us the resources again. It's the Nutrition Coalition. You can find out more on your website.
Yeah, I'll give you three websites. One is, maybe you can put them in your show notes, because one of them is ninateichels.com, and nobody's going to be able to spell that. So that's where I am with information on me. There's the nutritioncoalition.us. Nutrition Coalition is one word, .us, and that has just a lot of interesting information about saturated fats, about the dietary guideline. We are the only resource that is for, you know, transcripts of the dietary guideline meetings. And we get down into the nitty gritty of what's going on with this policy, because it is so critically important and influential. And then there's this new group called Low Carb Action, which I think is just lowcarbaction.org. And you could become a member of that organization, and that they are advocating simply, specifically for a low carb diet as properly defined to be one option in the dietary guidelines. Not saying everybody needs to go on a low carb diet, but just for it to be an option.
Just put out the correct, you know, and factual information. Just, you know, it's an option.
Just don't ignore the science.
Exactly.
That's all we ask. Don't ignore the science.
Well, great stuff. And, you know, really appreciate and acknowledge your advocacy on this most important issue. And I know that, you know, you've done so at considerable personal risk, because it's such a controversial area that you've attracted a lot of blowback, and you've persevered. Your book also is great, The Big Fat Surprise, Why Butter, Meat, and Cheese Belong in a Healthy Diet. It's really been instrumental in shaping public opinion. And, you know, you're doing a lot of good. So keep up the fight.
Well, thank you. Thank you for everything. And it's great to talk to you. It's just really a pleasure, as ever.
It's always fun. And stay healthy and well.
Likewise.
Which I'm sure you're fortifying your immune system through healthy diet, exercise, and all the right stuff. So all the best to you and your family.
Likewise to you and yours. Stay well.
Thank you so much. That's Nina Teicholz. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. As you know, this is a vital time to bolster our immune defenses. I've received countless requests for a specific list of supplements that I recommend to support immune health. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Immune Support Protocol, my supplement recommendations offering the greatest boost for your immune system when it's needed most. Best medicine is preventive medicine. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com for more information. drhoffmanstore.com. In addition to the immune support protocol, you'll find easy-to-follow links for our supplement starter kit, heart health protocol, and much more. These protocols are an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle. The same supplements I take for myself and prescribe for my patients. And for a limited time, you'll get free priority shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com.